As you can clearly see by the globe on the map, we're in Acts 26. We will, in fact, as near as I can tell, not use any of Mickey's slides once again today, as I want to look at some other stuff that has once again to do with the secular aspects of what's going on now. Just as I do frequently, or all the time, whichever way you'd like to look at it, just want us to know where we are. Obviously, we're here at this little yellow dot in the middle of the California desert. And if we go over to where we want to study about, we'll see that we go a fur piece around the world here and get over here to the Eastern Mediterranean. And, of course, we have what I've termed as the Bible lands. As we look a little more closely, we realize that what we're really particularly interested in right now in the Bible lands is Israel. And of course, you see up at the top the Sea of Galilee and then the Jordan River coming down and then the Dead Sea at the bottom. And we have right in the middle here Jerusalem, Antipatris. Why do we have Antipatris on here, by the way, at this particular time? What happened?
That's where Paul spent the night on Caesarea.
Right. So Paul was going on his vacation trip to Caesarea. And he had a bunch of friends with him, and they marched down here to Antipatris and left the vast majority of the guard to go back home from here, and then the next day continued on up to Caesarea, where he is now, where we're looking at things. And if we zoomed in on Caesarea before, and you know, you can see just some of the ruins that are left over in Caesarea. Some of these areas here are just the old ruins of old Caesarea. And of course, why was Caesarea built?
It's a port.
Right. And it was well suited to be a port, right?
No.
So it's a man-made port. There apparently was nothing. It was just, you know, straight line all the way up the side of Israel there. So they made a few things that would make a port available to it. So a bunch of maybe breakwaters and earthen things that went out. Yeah.
Is Antipatris still in existence?
There is something there. There's a Tel, I think they actually call it Tel Aphek. I'm not sure. I think there's a town there, or a village surrounding it, or fairly close. Yeah. If we zoom out a little bit, look over here at Antipatris, I think we'll find that it's probably in a populated area, but that's probably all the... Yeah, you can see all sorts of... So there's the there's some of the ruins of Antipatris there. I think they had like some sort of Catholic monastery or something there. It's got its own little lake there, as you can see. And it was, according to something that I read yesterday... Yeah, you can see that there's a lot of farmland and a lot of townage around. Something I read yesterday, as a matter of fact, they even got their little interstate highway running right through there. So that's probably why Antipatris, you know, fell into ruins, because the interstate bypassed it. So, but there was something about, there's a big river here somewhere, and I don't know exactly where it is. But apparently Antipatris in that area in there becomes a big choke point from getting from inland to the sea. And so that's why whatever was there to begin with was what was put there. Now, it's supposed that this could be Aphek from the battle with the Philistines, where the ark was taken in 1 Samuel. I'll get to that later in the charts, but... It's not necessarily that. Nobody has proved that it's that Aphek yet. Carolyn?
What's Aphek?
Am I pronouncing it wrong?
Naturally, right?
It's a town.
Okay.
Let me get my Bible out here.
A location, place?
It is a location, yes. So that would be the one in 1 Samuel 4:1. The word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out against the Philistines to battle and encamped beside Ebenezer, and the Philistines camped at Aphek. And the Philistines put themselves in array against Israel, and when they joined the battle, Israel was smitten before the Philistines, and they slew of the army of the in the field about 4,000 men. So this is where Eli's sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are killed. The Ark of the Covenant is captured, verse 4, and not at this time. It's later. Later on down in this chapter 10. Philistines fought and Israel was smitten. They fled every man to his tent, and there was a very great slaughter, and there fell of Israel 30,000 footmen, and the Ark of God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain. That's why Aphek is important. And that's why Antipatris, which appears to have been built at least close to the site of where Aphek was, is sort of important to us, other than the fact that Paul was overnighted there when he was on his way to Caesarea. That's where we are physically, as far as where in the world we are. I wanted to discuss, though, this morning, I wanted to discuss the Herods. Last time, 2 weeks ago, we discussed the Caesars. Who was around when Jesus was born, and who appointed this person, and who was here from the time before Jesus was born until the time after Paul was taken to Rome. We have there, then, of course, with the Caesars, we have Caesar Augustus, who had another name that was a real name, all the way through Nero. Several Caesars, 1, 2, 3, 4, looks like 5 of them. Now, as I was studying, though, with the Herods, and I'm not sure how visible this is, whether, James, you can even see that back there, but I guess you can see that there's white and black, and that's about it. I'll be glad to hand this out if somebody wants it later on. The reason that I have the Hasmonean dynasty up here is because I found this very interesting. I did not realize that by marriage, the Herods are descended from the Hasmoneans. In other words, they're descended from the Maccabees. Until I started looking at this, I thought, oh, really? So as we were talking about things, and you studied about this in the Tuesday class peripherally, in the interbiblical period, or the intertestamental period, I should say, about the Maccabees and the Maccabean revolt and the war that went on and things like that. So Daddy here, Mattathias, was the one that had these 5 sons. Judas Mattathias was the one that was called Judas the Maccabee. And what did it mean? The sword or the... The hammer. Okay. Yeah, the hammer. And so he sort of led the revolt. You'll notice that several of these brothers died at about the same time. After a while, things didn't go well in the war, and they were fighting, I believe. I want to say they were fighting the Greeks. I didn't look that part up. But anyway, we see here the folks that are here, but through Simon, the one that died first, he wasn't actually that very old. Anyway, he had these 3 folks here, and then John Hyrcanus is the one through whom some of this lineage comes. And so as we're following down here, we're seeing the lineage of the Hasmonean dynasty, the Maccabean dynasty. Yes, Carolyn.
Simon, those years, is that his reign?
It could be.
It has to be if he had children.
Because that's only 6 years, right? Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
He had a son who died before.
Oh, yeah, he's saying died. And so, yeah, I'm thinking maybe. The thing is that when you go back and look at some more of this stuff, you'll find that some of these people were high priests also. I think if we go to the next slide. No. So I have another slide on my desktop here that mentions that some of these people were priests and were high priests in the temple. So that's probably why we have these things here. So obviously this person died, and this person died. And they all appear to have died about the same time. And then Simon and Jonathan, it appears that they have a reign of some sort. So 141 to 135 and 160 to 141. Okay, so it looks like Jonathan was doing something, and then Simon took over. Difficult to go backwards like that. As the lineage goes down, John Hyrcanus was the son through whom further lineage came, and he also, I believe, was one of the high priests, and through this time. And he had these children here. Alexander Janaeus married Salome of Alexandria. And Judas Aristobulus also married Salome of Alexandria, but at a different time. And they had these people here, Aristobulus II and Hyrcanus II. And as we come down here, we get other people. But anyway, the lineage comes down here, and here's Mariamne. She died about 29 B.C., but Herod the Great is the one that married her. So she's in direct lineage of the Hasmonean dynasty, and Herod the Great married her. Herod was an Idumean. So he lived in the general area anyway, just lived in southern Israel. They got married, and Mariamne and Herod then started this, essentially it was the Herodian dynasty. Now, why do you suppose Herod was called Herod? It's because that's his name. But when we go down through the Herod dynasty, a lot of these people are called Herod simply to indicate what dynasty they're in. But that's his name. That's why he's called Herod. There wasn't anybody, as far as we know, before him that was called Herod. So, at least as far as I know. So, he lived from 37 to 4 B.C. But what also happened approximately in 4 B.C.? Jesus was born. All right. We have a tendency, and I don't know whether maybe you'll recollect, that the New Testament tells us, of course, that Jesus and his folks went down to Egypt, right? And they stayed there until the death of Herod the Great. Well, given that Jesus was born in approximately 4 B.C. and Herod died in approximately 4 B.C., it doesn't appear they were down there for years, unless we have text, and I don't remember it, saying that they were down there for a while. I think they were just told, go down to Egypt, and I'll let you know when you can come back. And then they understood that Herod was dead, and they came back. I have a tendency to think that, Jesus walked from Egypt to Israel with his parents, being 5 years old or something like that. No, I think that he would could have been still an infant at that time. Yes.
Well, I was going to say the trip down there would take some time. Getting the news might take some time getting back. So some amount of time passed.
Right, certainly. Yes. Randy.
I'm just curious, from a historical standpoint, the Hasmonean dynasty followed by the Herodian dynasty. These are kingships that are within the Greek Empire?
The Hasmoneans were independent. They ruled Israel. Now, I think that Mattathias, way back here, might have been set up by the Ptolemaic Empire. He might have been appointed by the Greeks. But by the time we get to here, they're in revolution and throwing off the Greeks. And so when we look at this stuff right here, I think we're looking at Israel as an independent nation, though not without a whole lot of turmoil going on. The Greeks had other things to do at that time. I think, you remember the term tetrarch. Remember, it's not tetriarch, it's tetrarch. We don't have that third syllable in there. Tetrarch, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, is named that because tetra means four in Greek. And I believe it was Ptolemy that when he died, his kingdom was split between four other rulers. I don't remember whether it was his sons or four other appointed people. And that's where the idea of tetrarch came from. In other words, a ruler of a quarter of something. By the time we get down to these folks down here, when we're talking about tetrarch, by that time the Romans had sort of incorporated the term and determined that anybody that was a ruler would be called a tetrarch, as long as he was just a general ruler. And then you'll hear another term called ethnarch, and that has to do with somebody that rules a particular, race of people, but I mean, ethnic group. Yeah, it'd be easy if I just use the term that's there, right? The important thing that I thought here was the fact that Herod the Great, through marriage, is related to one of the most famous families in Israel, and one of the ones that actually attempted to throw off Grecian rule at that time, and apparently were fairly successful for a limited amount of time until the Romans decided that they liked that area and they took it over. So we're here at Herod the Great from 37-4 BC. So now if we go and look at his, we can see here, of course, Antipater was his father, and then we have Herod the Great here. Now, he had all these multitudinous wives. I don't know whether he had more than one at one any one given time, but we can see that a number of people were his children through other wives. So here's Herod Philip the First, and we will hear of him. And then here's Herod Antipas, and we'll hear about him. And then Archelaus also we read of in the New Testament, and there are others here that were his offspring, but be that as it may, Herod Philip the First is from Mariamne the Second, and then Herod Antipas is from Malthas. I notice he was married to her in 24 BC, and Malthas was married in 23 BC. So I'm not sure what happened to Mariamne, but given the disposition of Herod the Great, I can't imagine that things turned out well. But as we go through this, you'll recollect this person and this person and their relationship to one another. Note that they are stepbrothers. They call them stepbrothers, right? If you're different mom, right? Same dad, different mom. So these two are stepbrothers. And of course it says right there, of course. I'll just give it away right now, right? So he was the one that had married Herodias. They lived in Rome. And then Herod Antipas went up there to Rome to to visit, and he visited with his brother, and he says, "Hey, I like your wife. I think I'll take her." They got married and went back to Israel. Somebody spoke about this relationship, and who was that?
John the Baptist.
John the Baptist. And he really lost his head about that. That was him that did that. And then Herod Philip the First, of course, he's the one that lost out. Now, it was supposed by some people that Herod Philip was dead by the time that these two got married, but according to what John had said, no, he wasn't. Because what did John the Baptist say to Herod Antipas? "Not lawful to you to have your brother's wife." But the Jewish law says, or the law of Christ, as we know, and the law probably of Jewish law, said that once the husband or the wife is dead, then the other one is free. And so as we come down here, we got Herod Antipas. He's the one that decapitated John the Baptist. Then we come down through here some others. Herod Agrippa, he's the one that decapitated James. He died in, he's the one that died in Caesarea of worms. Herod Agrippa the First. And I have separate charts for these also, if I even get halfway through them. No. And then Herod Agrippa the Second is the one that we're talking about in chapter 26. Notice that it says here that he was a descendant of the Maccabees. So as we go up here, we see that Herod Agrippa the Second, Herod Agrippa the First, Aristobulus, Mariamne, she was a descendant, a granddaughter of the high priest Hyrcanus the Second, who was a Hasmonean. And she was one of the wives of Herod the Great. So that's where sort of Herod gets his, "I'm sort of kind of related to the Maccabees." I'm not sure he broadcast that about. Let me see, I had a note here. Oh, I was going to put the from, and a lot of this stuff, a lot of the things that I have in these charts are from the History and Geography of the Bible Story by Bob and Sandra Waldron. And also, Richard Thetford put together a PowerPoint presentation that essentially copied a lot of Bob and Sandra's stuff. And he has a PowerPoint presentation that goes through this, that goes through each of the chapters of the History and Geography of the Bible Story. They had down that the Herodian family were Idumeans by birth, but had become converts to the Jewish faith. Their object was to found, under the protection of Rome, a semi-independent kingdom. And then Herod, who lived from 73 to 4 BC, was a Roman client kingdom, king of Judea. He was the second son of Antipater the Idumean His father was Jewish, and his mother was a Nabataean noblewoman. They're from the that region also. By his marriage with Mariamne, Herod the Great allied himself with the family of the Maccabees. In order to gain favor with his subjects, with whom he was most unpopular, he rebuilt the temple at an immense cost. In a fit of jealousy, talking about the kind of person that he was, in a fit of jealousy, he had his wife, whom he dearly loved, put to death. Later on, he had her two sons, Alexander and Aristobulus, also murdered in the same year in which he gave the order for the massacre of the infants at Bethlehem. He had Antipater, another of his own sons, put to death. A few months later, Herod himself died. And then his kingdom was divided between his three sons, Archelaus, Antipas, and Philip. So quite the person there, Herod the Great. So let's just look at these. He ruled over most of Palestine. He, as we mentioned, from 73 to 4 BC is when he lived. And then he divided it into these three sons of his. And then when he died, they got those. So you can see that they had various regions that they got. So Archelaus was given Judea and Samaria. And we'll talk about Archelaus in a minute. And then Herod the Great, he was obsessed with making sure that his dynasty was going to continue to be established. This is a quote from the book, Story of His Life is Strewn with the Ghosts of People Whom He Suspected of Treason or Disloyalty. And he ordered the death of 45 members of the Sanhedrin who had opposed him. There was another incident, I think it was Herod the Great, in which there was a bit of a disagreement in the temple area. And within a few months, he had ended up killing about 3,000 people on the Temple Mount. It was either he or one of his offspring. If people in his family became popular or started to get powerful or such, he had them done away with. The Jews didn't like Herod because, as he was an Idumean, these people had been forced into converting to Judaism back in the olden days. But that would make them sort of like Samaritans, right? Because they weren't really Jews. They were the Edomites. Even though they were nominally Jews, they were still hated by the Jews because they weren't really Jews. Herod was cruel and unjust. We've seen that already. He professed to be an observer of the law of Moses, but as they say, his life was a mockery to what it taught. Carolyn.
You said, who's, remind me of the history, who was forced to convert?
The Edomites. They were attacked and subjugated by the Israelites during the Unified Kingdom.
Way back.
Yeah, you have to go into the Wayback Machine here to figure that one out. They were, when the Edomites came under the control of Israel, then that's when they nominally became Jews. He did have some good points. He renovated Jerusalem. He started building the temple. You can see that in John, the second chapter, in verse 20. And then we've talked about this before, that he began rebuilding the temple in about 19 B.C. and completed the actual temple proper by about 27 A.D. Let me see. We got, Lynn, do you have John 2:20? I didn't look. What do we got?
It says that then the Jews said, "It has taken 46 years to build this temple, and will you raise it up in 3 days?"
Oh, yeah. That's where they're talking to Jesus about this. That's where they said it's taken 46 years to build this temple. Of course, as we discussed previously, a couple of months ago, I guess it was, they continued work on the temple area up until like 3 years before it was destroyed in 70. Some work, it says here, continued up till 64. I think it actually continued until about 67. This is not a shocking statement. The temple was more beautiful than the ones Zerubbabel built in 530 B.C. When the temple was finished, what did the older folks have to say about it?
It's not my fault.
They cried, right? So I'm not sure that we could say that the temple that Zerubbabel built in 530 B.C. was one of glorious majesty. It certainly wasn't an equivalent to Solomon's temple.
But they would have had money then. I mean, yeah. When he rebuilt it, not Solomon's type of money.
No, that's right. Yep. Yeah, Tommy.
The Apostle shows, though, that God wasn't interested in having the gold and silver and things, but it was more about giving the people a place to worship Him.
Yes, exactly. That's the temple was built for the purpose that it was there for. And that's probably disappointed some of the older folk, but that's the way it goes. It wasn't there to just show splendor. Herod built Caesarea, the town that we're talking about right now in Acts 26 chapter, in honor of Augustus Caesar, or Caesar Augustus, and he built that between 22 and 10 BC. So it took a while to get that port city going. This, of course, gave the Jews greater access to sea trade. I don't believe we see really anything about that in the Old or New Testament about the Jews going anywhere near the water. But it certainly did give them the opportunity. And then Antipatris, as we've already spoken about, was built about 9 BC and was named in honor of Herod the Great's father, Antipater. And it could be the town of Aphek, as we see in 1 Samuel, the fourth chapter and verse 1. Unclear on for sure whether it is, but even if that's not Aphek, Aphek is still in the close region of where this one is.
So neither one of those cities went back all that far.
No, well, a lot of them, Antipatris was built on an older foundation. Caesarea, I believe, may have had some occupancy there prior also. A lot of these things, you look at these things. Yes, the occupation there went back to the Neolithic era. And I'm going, okay. So, yeah.
Well, wasn't all that part of the trade route that went along the coast?
It was. And so, as a matter of fact, Antipatris / Aphek was on the major road from Jerusalem to Caesarea, and Caesarea was on the major road along the Mediterranean. It turns out that at Antipatris also, that if you go northwest, you go to Caesarea. If you go southwest, you end up going to Joppa and Lydda and those places over there. So it was a major crossroads at that time.
So he took what was there and really built that.
Yeah, I think in a lot of instances, it's like we would see it now. Oh, there's a bunch of ruins here. Let's, use what's left to build what we've got. I don't know whether they displaced people or it was unused, but people that had been living there. And as we continue, Jerusalem court was renovated. Pompey, when he attacked the city in the 60s BC, tore down the wall, apparently, in his assault on the city and on the Temple Mount. Quite a story about Pompey's campaign against the city of Jerusalem back in 63. That's very similar to the assault by Titus on the citadel of Masada, how they built ramps and things like that to get to where they wanted to go. All right, so after Herod the Great then, his kingdom, when he died, his kingdom was divided up. And the one that we read about particularly in the Bible that we remember is Archelaus. Now, you'll remember that it says that they said that Archelaus, when the family came back from Egypt, they said Archelaus was now in charge. And they thought that, well, since Archelaus was in charge of Judea, that they'd head up to Nazareth. Yeah. So they didn't go back to Bethlehem where Jesus was born, but rather they went up to Nazareth because Archelaus was in charge. He was not a particularly nice guy either. It says, after a reign of 9 years, Archelaus was deposed by Augustus and Judea was attached to the Roman province of Syria, being governed by a procurator. Antipas is called in the New Testament. Well, that's a different one. Okay. So when you see in the New Testament talking about Herod the Tetrarch, he's talking about Antipas, which I think will be the next person that we'll look at. But he only ruled for a few years in Judea and Samaria. 10 years right there? So after 10 years, about, he was deposed. He was almost as cruel as the dad. And the Jews really protested and he was deposed after about 10 years' rule. The southern land then was annexed and made into the Judean province, the Roman province of Judea, in about 6 AD. And after that, then it was governed by procurators, of which Pontius Pilate was the fifth one. So by the time we get around to Pontius Pilate, right, it's another almost 30 years, right? So, because we're talking about 6 AD here when things are happening right now. And so we have about 30 years to go before we get to Jesus' trial when Pontius came upon that. And then another son of Herod the Great was Philip. He was the son of Herod the Great and Mariamne. And you can look in Matthew, the 14th chapter, and verses 1 through 12. We won't look at that entire context, but if you look at Matthew chapter 14, you'll see that he's mentioned, because specifically in verse 3, Herod had laid hold on John and bound him and put him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife. The Herod that's being spoken of here in chapter 14 of Matthew is the man that took this man's wife. All right. He was disinherited because of disloyalty to the Herodian family, and he went to live in Rome with Herodias, his wife. And then Antipas visited them and took Herodias away with him. And we see that in Matthew 14, 3 through 4. That was Philip, and before him that we looked at was Archelaus. So we got Archelaus and Philip, two of the sons of Herod the Great, and then we got Herod Antipas. Now, he lived from 20 BC to 39 AD, and Jesus grew up in Galilee during the reign of Herod Antipas, from 6 AD to 29 AD. So, as we say, he grew up at that time, but he wasn't involved with Jesus, because Jesus didn't start his preaching until probably after this. So he wasn't as cruel as his father, and he wasn't as cruel as Archelaus. He's the one that arrested and executed John the Baptist because he said nasty things about him, right? He said, you're not permitted to have your brother Philip's wife. So we just talked about Philip. This is the guy who stole his wife, as it were. He was in Jerusalem on the day of Jesus' trial. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I got that mixed up. He lived till 39 AD. So because we can see that Pilate sent Jesus to him, and when he learned that Jesus was from Galilee, he says, oh, okay, well, Herod's here now, so go talk to him too. So we can see that in Luke, the 23rd chapter, in verses 5 to 12. Anybody close to there? Luke 23, 5 to 12. So in verse 6 of Luke 23, it says, but when Pilate heard it, he asked whether the man were a Galilean. And when he knew that he was of Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him unto Herod, who himself also was at Jerusalem in these days. And then you'll notice at the end of verse 11 that Herod sent him back to Pilate. So that was Herod Antipas. Now we have Herod Agrippa the First. And it'd be nice if I had a side-by-side here so we could follow the family tree down, because you get kind of lost. It's like this just is going straight down, but it's not. It's, things are branching out all over the place. We got sons and daughters and uncles and cousins and things like that. So, but Herod Agrippa the First was the one lived from 11 BC to 44 AD, and he's the one that had the very short rule from 41 to 44, and he was the one that ended up being eaten by worms. He was the ruler over most of the territory that Herod the Great had controlled previously. And he was a brother to Herodias. He's the one that killed the Apostle James. He's the one that imprisoned Peter, intending to kill him also. And so if you look at Acts, the 12th chapter, I'll go back just a little bit here to Acts, the 12th chapter, starting in verse 1, you'll see that in verse 1 it says, now about that time, Herod the king put forth his hands to afflict certain of the church, and he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. And when he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. He is the man then that seized Peter and put him in prison. And then, of course, Peter was miraculously released, and he goes and knocks on the door of whose house? The mother of John Mark, right? Yeah. So essentially, probably where John Mark was living at the time. And he goes, hammers on the door, and Rhoda the maid says, that couldn't be him. He's dead. So turned out he was feeling much better. So, and then in verse 23, we talk about Herod Agrippa the First, of course, when he had gone back up to Caesarea, and he was speaking to the people from Tyre and Sidon, and it says, and immediately an angel of the Lord smote him, because he gave not God the glory, and he was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost. And then Herod Agrippa the Second is the one that we're attached to right now. After Agrippa the First death, the land was divided again. And so Judea was comprised of what had been Judea, Samaria, Galilee, and Perea. So we've got quite an area that goes around and goes to the other side of the Sea of Galilee also. Perea, I believe, is over on the northeast side of the Sea of Galilee. And Agrippa the Second was given the northeastern section. I had a hard time finding how long his reign was. It looked like maybe it was from 48 to 67 because there was some sort of battle and war and things like that. And around 67, I kind of lose track of Agrippa the Second, though he did live until he was about 70 years old, as I recall. Yeah. And then when Festus came on board, he went to Caesarea to visit this new procurator. As we see in Acts the 25th chapter, we see that he went there. And then while at Caesarea, he heard Paul's defense. As we can see in Acts, the entire 26th chapter, we have Paul's defense that he makes to Herod Agrippa II after he's already made it to Festus, after he already made it to Felix, after he already made it to the Sanhedrin, after he already made it to the folks in Jerusalem. So this was his fifth, right? Paul described him as being expert in all customs and questions which are among the Jews. Apparently they outwardly observe the law of Moses. I have Acts 25:13 for some reason. I don't remember why. Is anybody close to that? Well, that doesn't mean anything.
It says Acts 25:13. Now when several days had elapsed, King Agrippa and Bernice arrived at Caesarea and paid their respects to Festus.
Yeah, so I'm not sure why they made that statement. But anyway, it does say following. But I think that's probably because Paul said that you're expert in all the things of the Jews. They were nominally Jews. They were Idumeans. And so they had been raised that way. But, I get the idea that they're kind of like the Samaritans. Well, we got these gods, we got those gods also. This god's okay, but, this god's just as good. That takes care of the Herods. And if you want any of the backup charts that I've got here, let me know and I'll get them printed off to you at some time. And Mickey will continue on with wherever it was that he left off last week. And back into Acts 26, right? Yeah. Thank you.